Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Today, a look at The Unwinding, a book that looks at the recent history of America as its institutions start to fail. The government, banks, and the media, all of it, leaving people on their own to find their own ways. It's a story of newfound freedoms combined with an epic loss of security for so many Americans. National Book Award winner George Packer joins us in just a little while. But first today, bringing arts to the inner city and a program that provides music education and performance training for minority students. The Sphinx Organization is in the spotlight this week at UMKC, where its founder is to be recognized at a Friday lunch. With us today is the founder of Sphinx. That's Dr. Aaron Dworkin. He's a 2005 MacArthur Fellow, a former National Arts Policy Committee member, and on Friday, he becomes the UMKC Conservatory of Music's inaugural Musical Bridges Francis Family Foundation Fellow. Dr. Dworkin, Aaron, so nice to have you. Good morning.
It's great to be here.
Also with us is Peter Witte. He's the dean at the conservatory. Peter, nice to have you again. Welcome back.
Great to be with you, Steve. Thank you.
Well, this is such an interesting organization, Aaron, and it all began because of your own experience in the arts as a kid growing up. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, you know, I started playing the violin when I was 5 years old and actually had a little bit of a unique background. I was actually adopted when I was 2 weeks old. By a white Jewish couple, and I was in New York, just north of New York City. And I was born, though, to an African-American Jehovah's Witness father and white Irish Catholic mother.
My goodness.
And so in the end, basically, I'm a black, white, Jewish, Jehovah's Witness, Irish Catholic adoptee. And at the point why I kind of raised that is that growing up, you know, I certainly didn't fit in. I had a big afro, and when I was 10 years old, I moved to Hershey, Pennsylvania. And my violin and the ability to speak about my life's experiences through that medium was incredibly powerful for me. And it transformed my life. And all too often, young students, especially young people of color or in underserved communities, don't have the opportunity not just to be exposed, but especially to have the opportunity to learn, to develop the craft of playing an instrument and being able to have music be a significant part of their lives. And so that's ultimately what led me to this work.
I was going to say, and so today you're determined to sort of play that forward, right, and see what you can do for a new generation.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, if anything, opportunities in our schools and in communities has decreased since I was a student. And so we're just looking for any and all of the opportunities that we can to bring access, exposure, and the opportunity to develop the craft to young people, especially those who otherwise simply wouldn't have that opportunity.
Aaron, you say those opportunities have decreased. Why are they going in that direction? What's that about?
Yeah, it's a great question, and unfortunately kind of a complex one, which is why I think the solutions are not very easy. One, you just have, of course, economic problems that are faced, and the reality is that those schools that are located in communities that are hardest hit economically often have the largest percentage of students who are underserved. And one of the big things that we talk about with communities and with parents is that it is our fault when the arts and especially music is dropped from school. And that's because we really don't cry out. And the reality is that when schools are looking at making these difficult decisions, they often follow the path of least resistance.
Yeah, yeah.
And if they know that communities aren't going to cry out as much about the arts, they figure if we have to cut, this is the area where we'll start.
You know, Peter Witte, again, you're dean of the Conservatory of Music and Dance at UMKC. To what extent are you seeing the same phenomenon that Aaron just described here in the Kansas City area, this notion of minority kids having fewer opportunities to pursue classical music, music of any kind of education in high school, for that matter? What are you seeing around town here these days?
Well, the challenges have been longstanding, I think, and really it's from the conservatory's perspective, we believe that Aaron's work and our own work are connected. We are an urban-serving institution. We are a conservatory with a history here in Kansas City, founded in 1906.
You bet.
And so we actually see the arts being of our community rather than for our community. And I think that's an important shift. So to answer your question, it's something that, as Aaron says, it's very frequently the first thing on the chopping block because it is not easily measurable. So there is no standardized test to become Charlie Parker.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it's the longest lasting legacy that Kansas City has is our musical and our arts heritage. It's a very rich legacy. But you have to take the long view. So we see our program like Musical Bridges and what the Sphinx organization does as a connecting point. And that's why it's so exciting to have Aaron with us.
And no question then, Peter, around Kansas City, you're seeing these kinds of programs. Are you seeing them get cut and kids not having the opportunities that Aaron had at one point in his life?
It's a little bit – sometimes it's the first thing to get cut, and other times it's just sort of the turbulence within a district or within the school system that can prevent a student from having a longstanding relationship with the arts.
So, Aaron, you founded the Sphinx organization when, and I got to ask you, you call it Sphinx, why?
Indeed. So we are actually in our 17th year, and originally the name came out of, I was actually still a student at the University of Michigan, and was actually, when I founded the organization, still working on my undergraduate degree, and we had our first programming before I actually got my master's, and when we looked at kind of how do we name this organization, what do we do in terms of what we're trying to reflect, Sphinx arose for a few reasons. One, just a geographical source for many people of color, the continent of Africa, the civilization of Egypt, and the Sphinx itself being this pinnacle of achievement. In other words, archaeologists will even still debate about when or how it was constructed, but we hold that up as the standard of excellence that all of the young people we work with should be striving for, something that is almost unachievable. And third is a little bit more complex, and that is that the Sphinx itself as an edifice has meant different things to different peoples that have lived around it for literally thousands of years. And yet they're tied together across time barriers, across cultural barriers by this thing, this entity. And we see music having that same power to connect people across time periods, and, of course, across cultural barriers.
I want to get our listeners involved here. If they've noticed the same trend that Aaron and Peter have pointed out here, this notion that there are fewer musical opportunities for students of color in Kansas City and elsewhere, for that matter, we'd like to hear from you. What are you seeing out there? 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888. You can also email us to updatedate@kcur.org or tweet us @kcurupdate. And I should point out that a fundraising event for the Musical Bridges program, again, this is an outreach program of the UMKC Conservatory of Music and Dance. This will bring music education to urban core students. It's going to take place this Friday morning at 11:30 at Pearson Auditorium on the UMKC campus. More information or to make a reservation, call 816-235-2963 or go to umkcalumni.com online. I'll give that information out again a little bit later in this segment. So, Peter, what is the difference then between the program you're pushing here, Musical Bridges, and Peter's Sphinx organization? Very similar, but are there differences or not?
Well, Aaron's Sphinx organization, I think the situation really is just a local application of many of the things that Aaron is speaking about and has been. And full disclosure, both Aaron and I are Wolverines, so we're both hurting a little bit about that last three-point
yes,
shot.
Yes, you are.
But
it's very painful.
Absolutely. But the Bridges program actually started in 2007, and we saw an opportunity to go into the Paseo High School and the Kansas City Middle School for the Arts and start working with students. And 2007, of course, the program predates my arrival here in Kansas City, but I was inspired by it. Flash forward to 2014, we're now with 57 students in 12 school districts.
Wow.
And so that speaks to the need, the desire, and these are very high-achieving students. And it's that's something to celebrate is there are great students in every school district in America. So while talent is equally distributed, opportunity is not. And Bridges seeks to provide that.
And so it works how then? The program does what exactly, Peter?
Well, what we do is we say, okay, youngster, so you want to study the violin. Do well in school first. So maintain a 3.0 grade point average in school. And here's what we will do. We will provide you an instrument if you have none. We will provide you lessons.
Wow.
And we will come to your community and provide them in your school.
Wow.
We will provide scholarship to the Youth Symphony of Kansas City. We will provide scholarship for you to participate in the summer programmings here. So we understand that there are all sorts of practical impediments, and we seek to remove that. And we've had terrific funding from PrepKC, the Shoemaker Foundation, Sprint, Hallmark, and certainly an incredible team of leaders like the Francis Family Foundation and just a champion beyond all champions, Val Chow, in order to make certain that these students have these experiences.
And for Aaron, it sounds like it's some of the same guidelines that sort of govern your program then. Do I have that right?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I think one of the things is that, unfortunately, it is still all too rare that there are programs like Musical Bridges that are really committed and dedicated to students that simply have very limited access. And these types of programs are absolutely transformative. For example, with our programming, not all of the students we work with are going to, you know, be able to become professional
yes.
musicians.
Yeah.
And especially for the students that we start on the instruments where we're putting an instrument in the hands for the very first time. And again, you know, the subsidized lessons, those types of things. A lot of them do not end up being professional musicians, but their lives are transformed. Their
yes.
academic achievement goes up through the roof. Their college matriculation goes up. Their quality of life increases. And you know, one of the things that this also is a very core skill set that is developed through early music education is creativity. A lot of students do not have enough opportunities to practice the craft, if you will, of creativity. And this is one of the core skill sets that our business community is looking for and has identified as the key thing that corporate America will need in the coming decades based on, you know, the direction of our economy. And so the more students that we're able to provide this type of training to will not only affect the overall arts workforce, but the overall workforce of our nation
That's
as a whole.
Interesting. We're visiting this morning with Dr. Aaron Dworkin. He's with a group called the Sphinx Organization. We're talking about the lack of musical education in some inner city schools. Also with us today, Peter Witte. He's the dean of the UMKC Conservatory of Music and Dance. We want to know how big of a problem this is in Kansas City and our community, this lack of musical education for minority students. 816-235-2888 is our number here. Let's go to Frank from Lawrence. Frank, you're on Up to Date.
Hello. I had just tuned in and I didn't catch the fact that it was just music oriented, but I wanted to encourage people. It's pretty common practice and it's marvelous what they're doing to help subsidize musical lessons, but it's pretty common for people to find a music teacher in their neighborhood or whatever. But I would also encourage people in the other arts, in the visual arts and sculpture, which is what I do, to seek and find artists among them, since it's not in the schools anymore, you know, where can you learn sculpture, really? Find artists in the community and, maybe every semester or every month pick a different one and introduce their students that way. That was my comment. I didn't realize you were all about music today. But
no, that's a good comment, Frank.
Okay, yeah, I think it's a good analogy. Well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Peter, you want to weigh in here?
Well, yeah, and to this broader perspective, you know, Aaron tells our story very nicely. In 2007, our program was really designed. It was perhaps too tightly focused on getting students into UMKC's conservatory. And that's a fairly narrow window, and we started in the sixth grade. Now, all the best intentions, but maybe success was defined a little too narrowly.
Mm-hmm.
And so as Aaron suggested, we said, hold on now. let's think about access to the arts as being a metaphor to access to higher education. The disciplines that one learns when one tries to master the string bass, the cello, the viola, the violin, the saxophone, these are the disciplines that will very frequently carry you throughout your life. So we've unpacked and celebrated the successes of all of our students in the Bridges program in all regions. And so, yes, they're coming to UMKC. They're also coming to Mizzou, to Central Missouri, attendance at the Interlochen Arts Campus, But they're pursuing music and music education, but they're also pursuing theater, medicine, even veterinary medicine. So it's a much broader range of experiences that we celebrate.
And Peter, I gather here in the Kansas City area, there is a role for non-school music programs that are playing some role here. What's happening? You mentioned the Kansas City Symphony before. What else?
Yes. Well, what we want to do is to reinforce what's happening in school districts. So if there is a music program in my elementary school, my middle school, or my elementary school, we require Bridges students to participate in that. They need to be citizen leaders in their own school programs.
Yeah.
For students who might be homeschooled or for whom there is not a school music program, we waive that requirement. But what we want to see is that Bridges students, through the experiences that are provided to them, they start to become ambassadors and leaders in their communities about what's possible through the arts.
Yeah. Aaron, what's your – stepping back for a moment and looking at all this from a 10,000-foot vantage point, what's holding, you know, this whole idea back, this idea of making a connection between classical music and African-American kids? What are some of the things that sort of are stopping that from happening at a higher rate?
Yeah, it's really been a complex problem. To give you a sense of, kind of the perspective of this, when we look at orchestras, nationally, about 4% of America's orchestras are Black and Latino combined.
4%.
Exactly. Anecdotally, what that means is that back in the 1960s, the New York Philharmonic hired its first African-American, one of the first African-Americans in a major American orchestra. And today, there are no African-American members of the New York Philharmonic. About 10 years ago, the Chicago Symphony hired its first African-American, who remains the only African-American in that orchestra. There are no Latinos in the New York Philharmonic, and the list goes on. So this is not kind of a minor problem. It is very, very stark. And there's a historical precedent where, of course, there was a time where it was impossible for people of color to join orchestras. But we've gone, of course, way past that time period. And now the problem is more complex. So we do have to look at the initial pool. We have to do the work of Musical Bridges and the work that we do at Sphinx to create a larger pool, to provide more access to large numbers of young people so that they can engage in music making at an early age.
But Aaron,
When
you go out and you talk to parents of African-American kids and you talk about the importance, you make the same pitch you're making to us today, what kind of feedback do you get? What's the reaction?
Well, it's interesting because as long as we do that in a thoughtful, diligent way, the response we get is overwhelming. We have waiting lists for all of our early music education programs. And in addition to that, a lot of times people say, what if you go into schools and they use kind of the buzzwords and like, you're talking to inner city kids, you think they're going to like classical music? Kind of no way. It's just not a cultural norm for them, et cetera. There is a significant amount of that is true in terms of what they've been exposed by major media. They perceive, classical music. There is nothing that is kind of, older and whiter than that, basically. But then when we actually go into the classroom with young musicians who are close to them in age and share cultural background, and we begin to play music, it opens up their eyes, and you would think that it was, Jay-Z in the classroom or something.
No
kidding.
They want
autographs. They think it's the most exciting thing. And then we talk to them about how some of their favorite artists all started out studying classical music and that's how they could build the skill sets to be the next Lady Gaga, for example, who shared that the only way she was even able to build her career was because of her classical music training. We talk about Tupac and the fact that he originally came from the Baltimore School for the Arts. So we talk about this, and the young people become so engaged. And on top of all of that, they see themselves in the music. And that becomes incredibly powerful. And of course, when you look at movie soundtracks or you look at cartoons, our young people are exposed to and engaged in classical music all of the time. Some of the major video games that are out these days, all classical music. And so that's one of the things that we talk to them about. And once they realize that and kind of the stereotype of classical music is stripped away and they realize what it really is and what the art form could mean to them, then, you know, our problem is identifying the resources to be able to support them.
Boy, I would love to see that light bulb go off, that scene you just described when kids sort of engage with this music for the first time. Peter Woody, I gather you've had maybe similar experiences here in Kansas City.
Absolutely. And in fact, in 2010, we brought the Sphinx Chamber Orchestra, and Damon Gupton was their conductor. He was also the associate conductor of the Kansas City Symphony for a time. Just what a talented man he is. And what Aaron shares so beautifully is this notion that if I see myself, if I see a woman who looks like me holding the bassoon, then as a young girl here in Kansas City, I might go, well, I want to do that. It's knowing what the available options are that are so important. And we've been very intentional in making certain that the artists that we're bringing in, we brought in the Harlem String Quartet and Imani Winds, and part of this is so that children in our communities can see themselves when they're hearing these great instrumentalists.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's sometimes as it is as simple as that, but that is not to say that it's simplistic. If I can see myself as a 6-year-old in somebody else excelling, then all of a sudden there are whole vistas that are open to me.
Aaron Dworkin, how many cities is the Sphinx organization in right now?
Yeah, and also just to add on to what Peter said, Damon is one of those fantastic artists we love working with because in addition to being a phenomenal maestro, he's also an actor.
Brilliant.
And was in Avatar, you know, The Last Airbender. And so when we start talking to the kids about that and if they've seen the movie, again, it just makes these connections that get them so excited.
Yeah.
But Sphinx is a national and actually international organization. We have our global scholars that travel internationally. But in the United States, as it relates to our virtuosi that Peter mentioned, every fall we do a 15-city tour of that orchestra where we do residency work in each of those cities. And then our programs like our National Sphinx Competition, the students literally come from coast to coast.
Peter, you've already mentioned UMKC is a city school. I'm wondering what percentage of your students right now in the conservatory are minorities of one kind or another. Do you know off the top of your head?
We do. We have about 30% of our students are students of color.
Wow.
Now, but that might be, you know, that's inclusive of a number of students who are Asian who are studying in the orchestra and violin instruments and stringed instruments. But quite honestly, we have work to do. When I look at the student population that we serve, and I love every one of those students, I'm continually asking myself if we reflect our own community and if we're preparing these students for America in 2050. And in terms of preparing our students for their future audiences, we know America is going to be majority-minority by 2050.
Mm-hmm.
So to the extent that we sit in separate silos, we're not doing anybody any favors. We're not doing the musicians who are in our nation's conservatories today any favors, and we're not building the very bridges that Aaron and Musical Bridges seeks to create.
Well, our listeners can get a glimpse of Musical Bridges and the Sphinx organization when Aaron Dworkin comes to town. He'll be speaking 11:30 Friday morning at Pearson Auditorium on the UMKC campus. Again, more information to make a reservation for the lunch, 816-235-2963, or again, you can go to umkcalumni.com. Aaron Dworkin, what a pleasure to have you. Thanks so much for taking some time.
It was wonderful to be able to join you.
We'll look forward to seeing you on Friday in town. And Peter Woody, Dean of the UMKC Conservatory of Music and Dance. Always good to have you here, Peter.
Thank you, Steve.